I guess just looking at some of the final question, just looking at some of the products specifically in year-round that were contributing in the quarter, it looks like you had a lot of growth and a lot of strength in Q4. Just wondering about the F3 in particular. It launched in the quarter, some shipments at the quarter end. We're now, I don't know, two-thirds of the way into Q1. Any color on how those orders or shipments have been proceeding and the dealer reception so far this quarter?
Like you said, we started shipping the F3 in January in North America, followed by international. So far, we're very early in the season. The dealer in North America had the product since mid-February, and international, they're just receiving the product now. But overall, very, very good media and review. Very pleased with all the review that was done. We're starting to have some customer feedback. We've done a survey with a few customers that are owning right now in F3. The customers are pleased. Our statistic on the satisfaction versus is very high. That overall, very, very good feeling about the F3 potential, but very early in the season.
Okay, thank you. I'll pass the line for now.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Benoit Poirier from Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. My first question is related to the CapEx increase for fiscal 16. So obviously, once you strip out the FX impact, it's still a good increase from last year level. So I was wondering if you could provide more details whether the CapEx increase is related to a specific category or the introduction of more products across several lines.
Yeah, I won't necessarily comment on which product line the CapEx is being allocated to. Yes, there's some infrastructure projects next year as well, but we're still heavily investing in product innovation. Again, with the breadth of product lines we have, we'll have a good product pipeline announcement for this year as well, and that's what's going to be driving a lot of the CapEx increase, Benoit.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. And just for the Russia, could you provide more color on the assumption with respect to the currency, because it's been reversing, so in a positive territory over the last few months. So just wondering what type of level are you currently forecasting for fiscal 16?
Then we were a bit surprised, Benoit. If you remember about the week after our call in December, the ruble dropped drastically, reaching about 85 ruble by euro.
Exactly.
For a period of about 2 weeks. And to be honest, I think nobody could have predicted the reaction of Russian consumer, but instead of stopping them to buy, they rush to buy luxury good, to buy it at a lower price because they were imported at a lower cost than 85 ruble per euro. Then what happened is our dealers in Russia were surprised. They had very, very good retail in December, January, and we replenished dealers with product more than what we had anticipated. Then this is, in a nutshell, what happened. I don't think nobody could have predicted that. This year, we end up at the end with 25% reduction. And for this year, fiscal year 16, we're planning 50% compared to what we had in fiscal year 14.
Okay, perfect. And maybe a third question, just in terms of inventory level, you mentioned a very good color about the reason for the increase. Just wondering what could be the implication in terms of the overall margins. Should we expect maybe higher discount, especially given the higher inventory level, but also given the upcoming introduction of new products? So just wondering whether it should translate into higher discounts for fiscal 16.
Actually, Benoit, in terms of inventory level, we are very comfortable with the inventory level today that we have. One of the big drivers of the increase year over year is snowmobile inventory levels in North America. Despite the bad snow conditions out west, the inventory levels are comparable to our historical inventory levels that we've had in North America. So we're back to normal inventory levels for snowmobile. And the other element which drove a bit more inventory is we've delivered Spark in anticipation of the retail season. And so those are the two big drivers. So we're not, our inventory levels for ATVs, when you exclude the new models and all that, the standard models are lower for SSV as well. So there's no level of incomfort and a need to push more sales program in the network in the near future in order to liquidate that inventory.
Okay, perfect. Very good caller. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Garrick Johnson from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to follow up on Benoit's question about channel inventory. Wondering if we could look more closely at that and if we could get a comparison of prior year channel inventory, how it looks if you look at 2014 off-road vehicle models this year versus 2013 and earlier last year, and then 2015 snowmobiles versus 2014 last year. Thank you.
Ben, Garrick, the inventory in North America is 15% higher than last year, but let's see if we try to give you some color. A third of the 15% is for off-road vehicle, and in there is Outlander L entering in the mid-CC and Spyder F3. And two-thirds is on seasonal products, split about half and half. One half is snowmobile. Again, normal inventory for a normal winter. Higher than last year, which was exceptional, but normal. And the other half is watercraft, mainly the addition of the Spark.
Okay. Moving on. Arctic Cat was pretty aggressive with snowmobile promotions in season and now with off-road vehicles. Do you think this has had any impact on your business?
If you remember, we had the highest spring break sales in model year 15 ever. And some of our competitors started to discount their units in December, and we didn't follow. We did follow mid-January out west because of the snow situation, but we never had really program in the east where snow condition was good. For the off-road vehicle, so far we don't believe that this is affecting our retail so much. We're playing a bit. We're more in the high-end product category, and so far we don't believe that this is affecting our retail.
Okay, that's good. And then you had nice dealer growth in North America, but I'm wondering, are you finding deeper penetration of your line with existing dealers, meaning are those dealers taking more of your product segments?
Well, the in terms of dealer coverage, as we saw in the script or in the presentation, we had a good increase in overall penetration of the year-round products, let's say line or take rate from existing dealers. So yes, that's one of the big drivers as well of our growth. We're seeing a 10% increase in the Spyder and SSV network coverage compared to a year ago. So that's not only driven by the 76 that we've signed, but also by existing dealers taking our lines. And when you look at the existing 76 dealers that we signed this year, 95% of them actually took the ORV line. So we're extremely happy with the penetration that we're getting.
Great. Thank you, Sebastian.
Thank you. The next question is from Anthony Zyka from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Josie, could you give us a bit more color in terms of promotional activity for the first quarter and your expectations for the second quarter? And the other part is, when you look at your dealers, you've increased the number to 76. Could you give us a bit of a geographic breakdown? And have some of these dealerships had some challenges with reference to lower oil prices? We've seen consumer confidence go down in Alberta. I'm sure it's the case in the Western U.S. But have you seen any evidence of this?
Okay, let's start with the promotion, the what's going on with the promotion. We are at the point in the season, you know, most of the summer product will end their season end of June, July. And you could see at this time of the year some OEM being aggressive But so far, I would say, except maybe for once, so far, the promotion activity, I would consider it normal. And typically, you will see aggressive promotion coming out more in April and May and the back end of the season, depending of an OEM situation and his inventory. Then, so far, I would quote the promotional activity like normal. In terms of the dealer, just to come back on the dealer, we're very happy because the focus of our new dealers, out of the 76, about half were in the South and Southwest, which is only 13 states in the United States. Then we're happy with the distribution that we've took. Maybe there is one thing that I would like to add. We have had a dealer in the last 2 years now, but the ramp up is a bit longer than what we had thought. If a dealer take a line in an existing store, it can be up and running within 6 months. But if a dealer extend his building or build a new building, it can take 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess our average is about a year. Then between the time that you sign a dealer, in average, it takes 12 months that the dealer is up and running with product in his showroom and the staff is trained and the sales is happening.
Okay. And with reference to lower oil prices, it's clearly impacting Alberta,
yeah,
and most probably also Western U.S. So have your dealers seen any evidence of that?
Yes. Sorry, I forgot that last question. Yes, we see mainly Alberta slowing down. All the West and Canada are slowed down. It's reflected into the snowmobile order that we receive. And for them, it's a double impact. They had the weak snow season, and on top of it, the economy in out West is so-so. Then, but all of this right now is factoring in our guidance for the snowmobile because we have preliminary order on our hand, and also because the adjusting now their order on the monthly basis on all the off-road vehicle, it's also reflected in the guidance.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Robin Farley of the UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. It's actually RPNF for Robin. So in terms of guidance of 7-11% shipment growth in the year-round products, could you perhaps break down side-by-side expectations in that segment? Also, any broad commentary you could give on the retail environment since start of the year, and especially through March, would be extremely helpful in terms of off-road. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll take the projection, and I'll have José give you some color on the retail for SSV. As I've mentioned in my remarks, the SSV industry is growing at a very good rate. However, when you look at our product portfolio in the SSV segment, we're not covering all of the segments. And one of the segments which we're not covering is the utility segment, which is one of the largest segment, about 60% of the overall industry, and also one of the fastest growing segments in the industry. So our projections for year-round product growth is impacted by the fact that we're not necessarily in those high-growth segments in the SSV industry, and therefore our forecast deliveries is lower than the forecasted industry growth for the segment. And I'll have José cover the retail performance.
Maybe also to add to Sébastien, in Russia, obviously, the biggest product that we're selling there is snowmobile, but we sell quite a lot of VTV and side-by-side. In Scandinavia, where the economy is also soft, we're selling quite a lot of ATV, and those two regions are definitely slowing down versus what we had planned last year and slowing down the growth in the year-round product. On the promotional side, I would say at this point, the situation, I would consider it normal worldwide. We have good momentum with the mid-CC ATV category. We're doing well in U.S., a bit slower than planned in Canada, because mainly what's happening out west, but better and international. Then our momentum in the mid-CC category is, I would say, globally, worldwide, on plan. On the side-by-side, like Sébastien explained, we're playing right now with the Commander and the Maverick families only in 40% of the segment. And it's definitely that something we're trying to resolve in the near future. On the Spyder front, we're planning this year a good retail growth with the addition of the F3. But if you remember, we wanted to reduce our we finished model year 14 with a bit too much inventory at the dealer level, and we wanted, our plan is to slightly reduce the inventory in the network at the end of the year. Then we're planning a retail a bit higher than the wholesales during fiscal year 16, and all of this add up to the 7 to 11%.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Derek Lay from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Just looking at the international market, have you been able to replace some of the sales that had gone to Russia into other markets?
If you remember, the Russia situation started in, I would say, in fall. We have been able to ship some unit in Canada, and mainly in Canada and some in U.S., but not too many out of the order because the Scandinavia market is different. Scandinavia and Russia market are different sled than what we use in Canada. Then everything we could, we have bring them in North America, but most of the inventory has stayed there.
Okay, thanks. And is Russia still your biggest international market outside of, well, outside of Canada and the U.S.?
Forecasted 16, again, we're looking at a 50% decline from fiscal year 14, so we'll have other big markets such as Australia, Brazil, that will be fairly close to what we're seeing in terms of numbers in, let's say, we'll call it Western Europe, which is not a country but a region, which will be material as well.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Cameron Dirksen of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I guess a question on the capital allocation strategy. You've announced an NCIB. I'm just wondering if you can talk about the thought process behind that. Was any consideration given to a potential dividend? And, you know, How do you think about the leverage? Do you feel like you're comfortable there, or is there, I guess, the next few years a plan to reduce that?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I mean, capital allocation is a recurring topic that we have at the board. When we look at our balance sheet and when we look at their overall power sport and we'll call it big ticket item discretionary sector, leverage is zero or minimal. So as part of those discussions we have with the board, we look at, well, what are the potential returns that we can generate through investing capital? We have a lot of organic growth projects internally. We look at our debt situation. I'll just remind you that our debt conditions are very favorable, maturing only in fiscal year 19 with covenant light. At a low cost, a 4% all-in cost. So when you after-tax that, it's only 3%. So paying down debt today is not necessarily something that is a high priority. However, when we look at where our stock price is trading and the potential return it could bring to shareholders by buying back shares, we believe that having the option to buy back shares this year could be a good alternative to give good returns to shareholders, and that doesn't mean that we're looking away from a dividend. However, I think we need to strengthen our balance sheet and deliver the business before we start thinking about a dividend in the near future.
Okay, maybe just a second question on margins. I mean, the guidance sort of implies, you know, roughly 12% EBITDA margins, which would be kind of flattish. And obviously, you got some headwinds here with foreign exchange. You're ramping up, you know, some new facilities in Mexico, so there's some headwinds. But can you talk about, you know, if we look beyond fiscal 2015, what the margin profile looks like? I mean, you know, how do you narrow the gap between yourselves and, you know, what some of your peers have, which is higher margins?
Yeah, for sure, FX has been impacting us, and we've lost 200 basis points if you compare 15 to 14 and then 16 to 15. So that's a big hit. And also, last year and this year, we are transitioning to new manufacturing facilities. So all the cost improvements that we're building into our product design is being offset by some of these initiatives. So we are extremely focused on improving margins over the long term, and such initiatives as the transfer of PwC to Mexico will bring improved margins, but that will be in fiscal year 17. And that's, again, part of our ongoing strategy. Yes, we want to focus on increasing top line, and that's going to be a big driver as well of improving margins because your asset utilization is much, much better. But also improving the way we build products and the cost of our products will also be an important driver of that margin growth.
Okay, perfect. Maybe just last quick one, just on the PAC up 10 to 15% in the guidance. That seems pretty strong. Is there any specific driver of that?
Well, we've have an aggressive PAC strategy or a strong PAC strategy where we want to increase the dollar per unit of PAC sales. We've had successes in the past. Have you seen our results and our PAC sales grow? And that's going to be continuing next year as well. We have a dedicated PAC sales team that are focused on increasing our PAC penetration rate at dealers, and they have key metrics that we follow to make sure that we achieve those targets. And so these are the drivers that are as part of the retail and the top line growing. We also have some very effective go-to-market strategies that will bring that top line growth as well.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Mark Petrie from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Just a couple of quick follow-ups, actually. So on the ramp-up of the PwCs down in Querétaro, so that's $20 to $25 million. And is that in fiscal 2017 where those savings will be realized?
Yes, that's going to be in fiscal 2017, Mark, that we'll be seeing those savings come in.
Okay. And then in terms of the actual revenues coming out of or resulting from production out of Juarez 2, will we actually see any in Q4 of fiscal 16, or is that a ramp-up in fiscal 17 and fiscal 18?
You will see a bit in Q4 of this year, and the ramp-up is going to be happening in 17. But, yes, we will be delivering units, finished goods, out of that facility this year.
Okay. And then just in terms of FX, I mean, the positioning sort of or some of the commentary that we've – heard from you, generally speaking, is, you know, net hedged over the course of a year. But it does seem that it's going to be having, again, a pretty significant impact in terms of fiscal 16. Is a lot of that timing and just sort of lapping some of the moves, or how should we think about the FX positioning from a natural hedge perspective going forward?
Well, we'll continue. We believe that in the long term, that's the best strategy because you could do some forward contracts, but you're always 12 months, let's say, behind the increase. Having costs and offset the revenue in the various currencies for us is the best strategy, despite the fact that it hurts the margin. But on the economic side, on the cash side, it produces the best results and protects us the most. And so that's a strategy we've had in the past, a strategy we're going to continue having. We're going to refine it for sure. We're going to be looking at certain exposures, how to better manage it, because as you know, certain countries where we're export, we have very little cost, but a lot of revenue. Can we do a better job of managing that exposure? We'll look at it. But when you look at the two big currencies for us is the USD, where we have a lot of revenue and a lot of costs, and the euro, where we do have some good revenues but also some costs because of our manufacturing plants in Europe. And so for us, that offsetting strategy is the best strategy, despite the fact that, okay, if the US dollar continues going up, it's going to be impacting margins negatively. But as I said, if the U.S. dollar continues going up, as the U.S. is a benchmark for pricing around the world, we feel it's good for the overall business.
Okay, and that was sort of actually my just follow-up. In terms of the Canadian dollar, obviously you guys have a reasonable amount of your costs in Canadian dollars. How do you think about pricing within North America?
The U.S. market is still the biggest market in the world for recreational products, and it's somewhat the reference country for pricing. And we need always to manage cross-boarding shopping between country, and this is true between U.S. and Canada, but it's also true in Europe, where countries that they don't use the euro currency. Then typically you keep a 10% gap between your Canadian pricing and your U.S. pricing adjusted for the currency. So far, we saw some of our competitors increasing their pricing in Canada. That's an opportunity for us. But obviously, this is something that you see more long-term. Then it will take a few years. If the U.S. dollar continues to grow, to gain in value versus the Canadian, you will see pricing in Canada going up. But it's something that is not happening overnight. It could take a year or two, 3 years to follow the currency or fluctuation.
Okay, thanks very much. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Craig Kennison from Robert W. Baird. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Most have been addressed, but I'll follow up on the share repurchase plan. Does your guidance include any share repurchase activity, or would that provide upside? Thank you.
The guidance does not include any share purchase activity, so it's based on a constant share count as where we ended in fiscal year 15, so 118 million shares. So today it's on a constant share basis.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Martin Landry from GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. So just going back to your Q4 results, they've come in higher than your revised guidance that you gave in mid-December. It would suggest you've had a strong January. Can you talk a little bit about what came in, you know, better than anticipated? Was it related to the change in the dealer patterns?
Good morning, Martin. Yes, when you look at the results, especially on the EPS side, we did come very strong, and on the EBITDA as well. However, there's two things which impacted our results, which are, I'll refer to as externalities. The first one is the effects from the revaluation of the balance sheet, the working capital elements on the balance sheet. That resulted in a gain of about $12 million. So when you strip that out and remove that, that's about 7 cents. On the EPS and about $12 million on the EBITDA, and also the tax rate. We had announced, we had reduced our guidance on the tax rate when we announced the results in Q3, coming from retroactive changes in tax laws that happened in Q3, but new changes also happened in Q4, which impacted our EPS for an additional 3 cents. So when you strip out these elements, 10 cents on the EPS and about $12 million on the EBITDA, we're kind of within the mid-range of the guidance, and therefore nothing extraordinary happened in the quarter, which made us miss or come in higher or lower than expected. As Jose mentioned, Russia was a bit stronger than what we had expected. However, that was offset by lower sales of parts and accessories.
Okay, and just to be clear, the 10 cents you're talking about is that's not excluded from the adjusted 98 cents you reported?
No, it's not excluded.
Okay. And then lastly, on the side-by-side, you do mention that you're not in the utility segment. Any chance to give us some color on how you're faring in your addressable market, meaning how are your retail sales doing versus industry and the markets you're targeting?
Yeah, the Commander play into what we call the recu, the vehicle you can use for recreational or utility activity with bucket seat. This segment is slowing down slightly, and we are maintaining our market share. On the sport category, this segment is growing, and so far we're maintaining our market share. The Maverick XDS and XDS Turbo were shipped a bit late, to be honest. I think our team have done an incredible job to develop those high-performance vehicles, but in an ideal world, we'll have shipped them maybe 2 months before. They arrive in large quantity in January, and so far we're hearing good things. And basically, we're maintaining our share in those two segments that we are in. We believe the Maverick XDS and XDS Turbo could get some momentum, but the disproportion of the utility versus the rest is really causing the market share loss when you look at the overall industry.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Merci.
Thank you. The next question is from Tim Conder of Wells Fargo Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. This is actually Mark Tarantino for Tim. Just as a quick follow-up to the FX and pricing questions, so are you actually using the Canadian dollar at all to your advantage to gain share in the U.S.? And then could you also provide any additional color on hedging for 2016? How much are you hedged and at what level?
Yeah, in terms of leveraging the Canadian dollar for U.S. pricing, no. We look at it as two very distinct markets, and the demand for the markets are different, and consumers are slightly different, and therefore we're not taking the potential lower cost from the Canadian dollar when you convert it to U.S. to reduce pricing and gain share. We are respecting the pricing and the market conditions that are there. As I said, again, when we look at our overall FX position, we look at it globally within the company. And so, yes, we are benefiting from a strong U.S. dollar on the top line, but because we have a good amount of cost in the U.S. dollar, it doesn't mean that the margins are increasing as there's an offset that's occurring there. And in terms of hedging strategy today, the currencies that we are actively hedging with forward contracts are the AUD, the SEC, and the NOC. And we do have a policy that allows us to hedge not more than 60% of the next 12 months and at least 25% for the next 6 months. So we are within these guidelines and say we're probably at 30% for the SEC and probably the same range for the NOC, and the AUD also probably in the same range in terms of overall hedging.
Okay, great. And then do you have any updates on the pending regulatory issues with the CPSC?
We continue, all the OEM continue to collaborate together through the ROVA Association, and we are in discussion with CPSC. Discussion are going on, nothing to update at this point, but we are confident, we're following that closely, obviously, and we're confident that we can meet any new regulation that they can come with.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Benoit Poirier of Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just to come back on the Spark, if we look at the industry, was kind of a low single digit early in the season, while the Sea-Doo was overall flat. I was kind of expecting you to gain market share just because of the Spark. So any color on those numbers so far?
Right now, the don't forget that we started to deliver the Spark in September 2013, and when we introduced the vehicle, we already had produced units and we shipped to the dealer very quickly, and we had a very good response from day one on the Spark. But what happened last year, Benoit, we because of the demand was bigger than what we had planned, we extended production from the end of March till the end of June. That gave us the additional volume. This year, because we're planning the industry to be at least what we had last year, we started to ship a bit earlier in this year, in fiscal year 15. to plan finished production in March to give us the opportunity again to increase production if the retail is there. But at this point, it's a very low number. Huh? We probably have 5% of the retail of the season done, and right now the industry is flat versus last year.
I see. Okay. Very good color. And is the mix between traditional and Spark mostly in line with the initial expectation, José?
So far, yes.
Okay, very good. And last question, just with respect to your guidance, does it assume the new products introduction that we might see this year?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks again.
Merci.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn it back over to Mr. Bussey.
Great. Thank you very much, Sebastian. So I want to thank all of our participants for today's call. Wish you a very good day, and we'll talk to you when we report first quarter results in June. Thank you very much, and you all have a very good day.
Thank you. The conference call has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. We thank you for your participation.